Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting FilmSack. You probably don't think much about internet privacy on your own home network. ExpressVPN will secure your privacy and protect your information. Visit expressvpn.com/filmsack and get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/filmsack.
One last big heist. What a great idea. Yeah, Joe knows best. Yes, sirree. Joe knows exactly what he's doing. Exactly what he's doing. What does Joe get me? Stuck in a bank called the Alamo, surrounded by the entire Los Angeles Police Department. Look out there.
Beavers and ducks.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, and we are on episode 464. My name is Scott Johnson. Joined with me today, Brian, the sleepover bandit Dunaway.
Oh, it's a bad idea. Mm. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thank you for the lovely dinner, Miss Banks. Please don't cry. Mr. Banks, could we bother you to set up the Monopoly board? You the best, Mr. Banks. Now remember what we told you. We aren't like those horrible sleepover bandits that spend the night with a bank manager and then rob them the next morning. Nope, we're just going to play a little game of Monopoly and we'll be out of your hair. We're the board game bandits. Now hand me the car, Mr. Banks, because I'm always the car and I have a gun. Now stop crying. Also, you are the banker, Mr. Banks, because, duh. Oh, so you picked the fancy little dog. No. I almost picked the fancy little dog, but I'm sticking with the car. Okay, I'm rolling first, and I rolled a 10. Well, that lands me in jail. Give me the dog. No, you can be the car. In jail? What? I know it's just visiting. Whatever. I'm rolling as the dog. Now stop crying. Your turn was the car, and the car has already rolled, and I rolled another 10. You know what? Just give me the money. Stuff it in this Crown Royal bag I stole from your liquor cabinet. Don't bother with the ones. Come on, hurry up, Mr. Banks. Uh-huh. All right. So thanks again, Mr. and Mrs. Banks, for a lovely evening. Oh, look, their mailbox sign says the Ibbots. Boy, did I get that wrong. Oh, well. I guess there are worse ways to spend a Saturday night. Boom! Twist ending!
Whoa.
Epic long intro and done!
Wow.
Give me my prize.
Wow. I don't even know what to
what,
say.
What, it's not a competition?
No.
Whatever.
It's, absolutely, it's a competition, and we give you the prize every week.
Yeah, you win every week.
Aww. Yeah. Yeah.
Default standard win. Well done.
Exactly.
By the way, Monopoly. Well done with the Monopoly. I don't know why you even used it, but it's fine. It's good.
Well, it has a bank in it.
Oh, it has a bank in it. Got it. Nailed it.
You got to be a banker.
Get it. All right. Hey, also with us, Randy. He divides his bed with a curtain as well. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
But as we all know, you didn't drive all the way out here to this hotel conference room 10 miles out of town to make small talk. You're here to learn my patented method for escaping capture by the police. And it's all in my new book, Don't Do Much, A Guide to Leaving the Scene of a Crime and Carrying On Living Like a King Out in Public. you're going to read all about my three big rules. Number one, get other people involved. Mm. Strangers that you meet, rope them in. Old friends who are always trying to pick up girls, bring them on board too. The more people you're working with, the less likely you'll get caught. Number two, use disguises, but don't make them too elaborate. Put on one mustache, wear a hat backwards, but that's it. That's all you need to throw them off so far off the trail that you can go to bars and throw money around without being spotted. Number three, do your robberies in a roughly straight line from one place to another, and spend your time in between those places. No one will ever figure out what you're doing because they'll never believe you're that stupid.
Can't wait to buy the paperback version of the book. With us finally, Brian Beavers and Ducks Ibbett.
Beavers and Ducks. Mm-hmm. And vaginitis. This week, I watched one of my favorite films featuring Bruce Willis as an ex-con that gets out of jail and immediately goes on a robbery spree with his partner. There's song lyrics that are important. There's a love interest played by an actress that has to hide her real accent for the role. Anyway, when I was done watching Hudson Hawk, I watched Bandits.
It felt like it, didn't it?
Nice. Nicely done. That's very good. I didn't see that coming. Just like the twist ending of this movie. Didn't see that coming either.
No. I'd seen it before and I forgot the ending.
Yeah. It's really strong stuff. It's called Bandits. It's directed by Barry Levinson, and it came out in 2002?
One.
One. Sorry, one.
You just told us it was right after 9/11.
You're right.
1 month after 9/11. Yeah.
1 month after 9/11, which kind of killed it, and a lot of movies that month just got destroyed by that event. So a lot of people didn't see a lot of movies that came out then, which is a real bummer because I think that was probably the reason I didn't see it. It was just wasn't on my radar. And man, did I miss an awesome movie. I think Bandits is great. In fact, I'm just going to say it. Okay, I'm going to say favorite film Zach of this year so far. Favorite. Let's say it this way. Favorite, I'm not saying episode of the show. Favorite movie that we discovered that I hadn't seen before on Film Sack.
Most enjoyable movie That's you've fair. Seen.
In a long time.
Yeah,
that's fair.
And I don't know.
On FilmSack.
On FilmSack. I didn't expect that. I expected, you know, I mean, I'd seen almost every other Barry Levinson movie ever made. He's responsible for one of my favorite all-time movies, Avalon, and I just love it, and I can't praise it enough. And I love Rain Man, and I love, you know, Diner, and all those movies are great. So how this one, you know, I skipped this one. I don't know. Maybe I thought this was like that Toys one he did that was real bad. And I thought,
I didn't think Toys was that bad. It's the Robin Williams fun. One.
Yeah,
the,
I love Toys.
Yeah, it's not great. It's
Joan Cusack. It's just weird. I mean, it's weird. You've got to be in the right movie for Toys because it has no apologies for being out there and crazy.
Yeah,
right. If you follow Willy Wonka for a day?
You're probably right. I need to go back maybe and give it another shot. But he just like Wag the Dog, another good example. He just makes amazing films. I think one of the great directors. And so Bandits. On the surface to me, when we first announced we were going to do it and we put it on the list, I went, I don't know. This looks contrived and it's these actors, but okay, but I don't know. And the cover of it looked just kind of, here's Bruce Willis looking Bruce Willis-y.
Yeah.
And
yeah, this just, is a typical early 2000s, late 90s looking heist movie.
It definitely looks like poster. That on the outside. But man, you crack this thing open. The performances are great. The story's subtle and interesting. It has heart. It's also weirdly edgy. It's got like amazing direction, really great sound work, weirdly, for a thing like this. It's a comedy, but it's not. It's a great heist movie, but it's also something else. Like, I loved it. I really liked it.
And they put Bruce Willis as your headliner because he was probably demanding the most money at that time. But Billy Bob Thornton and Cate Blanchett really,
they killed
it. Was them. Yeah. They were really, it was about them.
They were great. And maybe one of my favorite Cate Blanchett roles, weirdly, because she's just so different in this than she is in just about anything else she's ever done. And Bruce Willis is just the right kind of Bruce Willis for me in this, and Billy Bob Thornton, I just can watch him do whatever. I like that guy.
Well,
that
guess
much.
What you did? You did just that because he did just about whatever.
Yeah,
in Bandits.
That's true. He kind of did whatever, but it's just a great. I don't know. I had no expectations, and I came away going, This is a thing I would not only watch again, I would recommend this to friends and say, hey, before it leaves Netflix, make sure you watch this movie nobody ever saw, because it's great.
I just want to say that's a great spot for us to stop, listeners. If you haven't watched this movie, we're about to spoil really big twists and surprises. Like, we're going to utterly ruin the experience of watching it for the first time. So if you haven't watched this movie, just pause this podcast and watch it.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And how often do we say that? We never say that, do we? Like, we usually don't care. If there are twists in a story and we're doing Film Sack, who cares? This movie's 20 years old almost. Mm-hmm. But
We care enough about your enjoyment of it to say, you know, if you haven't seen it, this is a good one to stop and see.
Yeah.
Twist is part of the charm of this film. And the one thing I think this movie suffered from, and I got to go back, I'm still formulating this thought, but it seems after like Pulp Fiction, there was a time during the late 90s, thanks to Pulp Fiction, that allowed character movies like this to kind of breathe a little bit, because there was a lot of scenes in this film that you could have cut quite easily and still pretty much end with the same product, but they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They just kept it.
And there's this whole other way of looking at the movie. And I want to, I'm kind of amazed that Scott talked about all the things he loved about it and didn't mention the, what I consider the real brilliance of the film, which is the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
This was shot by Dante Spinotti. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about him before, where this is a legendary cinematographer that has no business in movies that, of this particular cachet, in my opinion. But he, we last saw him when we watched Heat. The movie Heat was shot by Dante Spinotti, and he's just a genius with a camera.
Yeah.
Like, the first time you see Cate Blanchett in this movie is so good. One of the greatest shots ever put on film.
Yeah.
Like, I want a print of the shot, a close up of her face,
with the blue light, and she's in the golden
blue light. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and she's singing.
Absolute genius.
What's the Bonnie Tyler song? I always forget.
Holding out for a hero.
Yeah, I saw that.
The first of two Bonnie Tyler songs probably featured in this movie.
Yeah.
So I guess two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah,
music was definitely popular.
Thank you, Randy.
Music, right.
That was a great joke. I hope you were thinking of it while watching the movie.
Yeah,
and
I was
holding it.
Yeah, I was holding it just for this. Yeah.
All right, that away.
Oh, popular music. It was well played.
Yeah.
In this film.
Well, they used some stuff that was kind of retro and at the same time kind of perfect for the tone of things. Like, those two songs were great. The use of the repeating song on I forgot what it was but the one on the jukebox.
It was really important to the story because it was a way for us to recognize how we truly, usually, on a shallow level, fall in love or in lust with somebody, because we'll find things that are very universal and pretend they are unique and universal to just us two.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that song, them both knowing that song, probably a lot of people know that song.
Yeah.
And even in 2001, plenty of people knew that song.
It's right.
Yeah.
Well, and the movie is absolutely chock full of scenes like that one, where they're laying in a bed with a curtain divider between them and they're singing bits of a song to each other, because that could have been so bad. It could have been so out of place, and, you know, it could have taken you away from the film, but it actually I actually wrote this thing down that I've been trying to figure out. I want to make fun of the movie,
mm-hmm.
because the movie in one way is about the challenges of navigating a modern polyamorous arrangement.
Right.
And for some reason, the script seems to require all of the participants in the poly relationship to be criminals with terrible mental issues.
Yeah.
But in scenes like that, you see their mental issues, but they're not like killing you with it.
Right.
You're not like turned away.
Right.
You know, like they're being kind of childish and weird, but it's subtle.
Yeah, it's very subtle. That's what I guess. You know what? You kind of got to what I think I like about it the most. And I'm going to credit Levinson for this, because he's good at doing this, but everything is done with a soft hand and in a way that is not so in your face. So, as an example, I normally hate it in movies where there's a fake TV news show and a fake TV host who's like, you won't believe what's happening in crime right now. Zibba, zibba, zibba. Tune in later for Criminals on the Run or whatever it was called. And I usually hate that. This totally worked for me. It felt like a real thing. That guy felt like he was the real thing. And not just that on authenticity, just the tone that they used. They didn't try to overdo it. They didn't try to make me think it was like this crazy reality show or something. It just worked for me. And
wait, I just want to stop. That guy is the pit bull of comedy, Bobby Slayton.
Right.
So like as if you weren't already scratching your head about Billy Bob Thornton being in this film. And like, there's just some weird casting going on throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
Bobby Slayton had no business being in this movie, and he's freaking perfect.
Yeah, absolutely perfect. He made it work. And that to me feels like a director made a decision, or somebody in production was smart enough to know you couldn't just put some loudmouth a-hole actor in that role. You needed somebody who was like kind of down to earth and serious about it.
Like, you couldn't do a Robert Downey Jr. with a fake Australian accent, for example.
Right. Would have been bad. Oh my gosh, dude. Yes, that would have been terrible.
Now you do make me wonder, what if it had been Tom Cruise, though?
Yeah.
What if that had been Tom Cruise?
I mean, that worked. That worked for Tropic Thunder, and I'm glad they did it. And there's another example is the more modern, was it RoboCop, where Samuel L. Jackson plays some TV host guy. That stuff doesn't work for me because they blow it out too much. They make it too ridiculous. And yes, our modern news system is a little ridiculous, and certainly talking heads on TV are pretty stupid, but I needed that to be grounded, or else I wasn't going to be able to take this movie seriously. And it was really grounded and well done. And I never once went, oh, come on, that's not things they do on that show. I went, oh yeah, that is kind of what they would do on America's Most Wanted, or
totally
whatever.
What they would do. By the way, that the Robert Downey Jr. with an Australian accent was Natural Born Killers. He was the hard copy Killers on the Run TV show host.
Yeah, see, that's
he also had an Australian accent in one of the trailers at the beginning of Tropic Thunder, though.
Oh, did he? Australian?
He did, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Weird. Was that like supposed to be a throwback, or like a, hey, he tricked me
bunch right. of funny stuff.
But I just like that adherence. I like the time. So there's some time skipping in this thing. Normally, I can only think of The Witcher for some reason as being a bad example of time skipping, because they're not really good at it. You don't know what you're doing and why you're
like
doing
where
it.
You've almost got like present time and you see a little bit of it. And then you do this kind of back in 3 months ago or whatever.
Yeah, but
they don't even do the 3 months
ago. Yeah, they didn't even do that. They were very subtle about it.
They assume by wardrobe that you're going to understand.
And
they figured they were smart enough to know that they're not in jail and a bank at the same time.
Yes.
Right.
And it's hard. That's hard to do well. And the movie does it really well. And it's compelling because I've seen the final bank scene already. And now I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I'm real curious about what happens there. Well, here they are in jail. Okay. Well, that's where this begins, obviously, because they're not there for that crime. So it was easy for me to follow, keep up with that kind of time skipping. And a lot of times that's terrible in movies. So they did a great job with that. Like, I just have just praise for this movie. If I had one weak thing to say about it for me, it is the three-way relationship stuff was fine. But in the end, I think maybe they spent too much time fiddling or just trying to work it out. Like, I don't know. Right. I don't know why I didn't like that as much, but it was still fine, but it was a little much. I was like, okay, no, we get it. That's hard. Three ways hard, man. I get it. You know,
well, the writer is, Harley Payton, didn't really write anything else super notable, but, the writer, you can really feel the writer wants you to really have no idea what's going to happen after that shootout in the final bank scene. Like, it's almost like, okay, what, like, you're going to spend the whole movie wondering, does she or doesn't she? Who's she going to end up with, or either of them? And like, you're led by the nose to ultimately believe she's going to end up with neither of them, and this kind of thing. Like, every part of the weirdness is designed to throw you off the trail of basically that final scene. And I actually regret that they didn't show us the final scene the way they originally intended, which was with Cate Blanchett pregnant, because everything else about that final thing. Like, they even give you the surprise guess who's getting married thing by showing you the bride and groom from behind without seeing their heads, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, just like everything is supposed to surprise you in the final scene.
Yeah.
So why not explore this sort of weird polyamory? You're not going to believe it as it's going anyway. So, you know, make them all just weird and dumb and fighting.
I mean, part of me is kind of like I'm kind of glad they didn't take it quite that far with the pregnancy, just because I would have been like, oh boy, now that's a problem. And that's probably why they didn't do it, because your brain wants to dwell on the complications that brings to the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they wanted us to be doing that at the end. At the end, we want to be going, oh yeah, they made it out. They're good. This plan worked. And not only that, his weird cousin or whatever the hell he is getting married, and that's awesome and all that. And by the way, I laughed out loud, but not because it was funny, but because it was the best, one of the great, it was like a gift in this movie when the special effects cousin dude, I forgot his name.
Mm-hmm.
Harvey. When I started to realize what the plan was, and it was all unfolding, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're wrecking that car because they're gonna get out of here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he comes out on fire.
Mm. Oh right!
I laughed so hard, and it was more of a joyous laugh because I was like, that's amazing, because he couldn't wait to do one of his stupid tricks.
And it's not just that; it's in Hollywood. The whole thing is planned for them to end up pulling off his dream in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, they go to that length.
Yeah. I loved that. There was something about that was like weirdly sweet and satisfying. And
I'm glad that worked for you, because I was thinking this felt like somebody took a book. This story seems like something to read in a novel.
Mm.
And then for the movie, you would combine characters. So there would be no Harvey Pollard, because it wouldn't be necessary. You would stay with our primary characters, Bruce Willis, Billy Bob Thornton, Cate Blanchett.
Yeah.
And you would always like ask yourself, oh, she's looking for the perfect man. And this is really being told from her point of view. And maybe Bruce Willis and Billy Bob Thornton are just some kind of weird amalgamation of what she thinks is the perfect man. And I actually found the running time, like, I didn't want to see Billy Bob Thornton have one more anxiety attack. I didn't need it. And so that kind of made me start looking at Harvey and kind of go, do we really need this character? And I kind of want to tighten everything up.
Ryan Dunaway, the big question for you is,
yeah,
do you think Billy Bob Thornton's character was actually a hypochondriac, or was that a put on for the entirety of the ruse?
Ooh.
Right. I believe just that felt very honest to me. Like I said, if I was to think of any type of, I really feel like, even though we believe that Billy Bob Thornton is kind of the center of this story, he's kind of, you know, who's telling the story, I really feel like it was mostly the narrator should have been Cate Blanchett's character, Cate Willer. So I think that's how I would have played it. That's how I would have preferred to see it. But once again, it sounds like everybody enjoyed all the Billy Bob Thornton. But by the time Billy Bob Thornton was paralyzed on the floor at the dance at the bar,
yeah,
I was like, I don't really need any more. I really don't need any more of this.
And it's that scene that makes me think, okay, well, it's got to be Ernest, because he would be putting that show on for the other two people who'd be in on the final heist situation. So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I don't think it was part of a long con. I think it was, he's genuinely a hypochondriac
I would have preferred to have tossed more of the Harvey Pollard stuff away and have developed a little more about Bruce Willis, because they really made his character very two-dimensional. And as a result, Billy Bob Thornton really didn't have much to fight against except himself. And
well, everybody's got mental issues. Joe's mental issues are that he's a kind of ruthless criminal, right? Like, he's clearly got a broken moral compass. Mm-hmm. And so you're supposed to spend the whole movie refusing to trust that character. Like, I just don't believe that character is going to come through in the end and do right by all these other people, because he's a criminal and he's not a great person, and so on. And it's like with every character, you can make that whole construction. With Harvey, you can make this whole construction, right? He's a little too dumb for this. He's a little too distracted by women on the street for this, right?
Yeah.
And so on. And I really like that about the movie. Like, yeah. I really like that. I'm glad that Harvey got some screen time here, and we get to see, like, when he comes out of that ambulance. Oh my gosh!
I know. I was so excited. I just so excited for him, and as a character, right, that they barely developed, because, you know, Dunaway's not wrong that Harvey just, you know, he wasn't there very much, but I think the performance was subtle enough that I bought into it, and I was happy for him when it happened, and then also happy for him when he finds this girl. Was a total hottie and way out of his league, by the way.
Yeah,
January Jones.
Oh, was that who that was? Oh, yes, January, okay. Jones.
You said, you told me on TMS. Oh yeah, she's barely in it.
Yeah, like, she's barely in. I thought she was somebody. I thought she was the girl that was dating the girlfriend of the kid that they first broke into that teenager makeout session.
No, that's the girl from Riverdale. You're thinking of
my bad.
Azura Sky.
Yeah.
Oh, that's who, okay. See, I've got my
your weird named
my weird named actress people mixed up. All right, so
this is like
January Jones.
This is like January Jones' early appearance. Like, she doesn't really become a thing for a decade, and then suddenly she's in Mad Men. She's in Last Man on Earth, of course. And God, please watch Last Man on Earth if you haven't watched it. She's such a small thing here, but the movie takes enough time to let you know that she exists, she's involved, she's clearly fallen in love with Harvey, right? Yeah. She's like, she's in it with them. Mm-hmm. And like, I just really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my main
problem with the Harvey character is they never gave me enough to make me think he went from the bumbling idiot we saw at the very beginning and throughout the film, that suddenly he could pull off the perfect heist movement at the end. I never saw the character develop. They never implied that the character developed. I mean, we've seen him practicing a couple of times, but nothing to really make me think that he had finally
honed his skills enough to be able to pull off the the fire suit, the squids.
You're describing the risks that the movie takes. The movie risks you losing the plot, right? Because a lot of things have to happen that you don't see in order for you to be surprised later.
Yeah.
You know, like, they have to plan all this stuff. They put really complicated plans into motion in front of you, and all that planning took place and you didn't see it, right?
Right.
And that's risky, because that can make you dislike the film. You're not being told the truth.
I totally, Dunaway, get where you're coming from. He's underdeveloped, and it's also just so therefore it's like, well, you probably could have compressed what he had to do for the team into those other guys somehow. But I also think it was important for the final twist of the movie for me to see that it wasn't a three-way marriage being performed in Mexico. It was his. And that was just like a final, like, oh, yeah, you guys got me again. Nice job. Right. You fooled me like four times in this movie. And I'm not used to getting fooled in movies. Like, I'm pretty quick to the, you know.
Like, we've seen enough that we know the clues that they usually set up for that sort of thing. And
yeah. Like, speaking of Bruce Willis, he's famous for being in one of the most twisty movies of all time in I See Dead People, or freaking, what's it called? Can't think of it. Sixth Sense. And so,
I see Dead People. You know what I'm talking about.
You know that movie, I See Dead People. And anyway, I love that he was in another movie where I got to, like, kind of be a little confused about how stuff went down. And I don't know. It's a director thing, I think. Barry Levinson knows how to pull my strings. And I felt his presence in this in the same way I feel it in every movie I've ever watched of his that I've enjoyed. It's just, there's something about him that
this movie sits in 2001 quite nicely. We talk about how films age. For me, my desires in 2001 to see somebody as interesting a character as what Billy Bob Thornton was putting out there. We hadn't seen anybody do that in a while when he came along. And he did seem smart and clever, and I probably would have enjoyed that exploration in 2001. But today, I don't know if I'm just geared for more of a Kate Blanchett type character exploration, and I really wanted to see, you know, why she was being so manic, why she felt so repressed, and that's probably the story we would tell today. But so I think in that way, 2001 is the right place for the Bandits, not or Bandits.
What a year. Like, that is the year that so many series of movies got started. It was the first Harry Potter movie, the first Ocean's 11 movie, the first Fast and Furious movie, the first Lord of the Rings movie. Like, so many of these big tentpole things were happening in film. And at the same time, you know, 9/11 happened, and lots of people were saying things like, are we going to go to the movies anymore? This kind of stuff, you know, so like...
Do you remember the first movie you went to back after 9/11?
Spider-Man, I think, was mine. I think the first Spider-Man movie. But that would have been that following May, so it was, could have been...
Didn't they have like a bunch of promotional stuff where he was between the Twin Towers and they had to like...
Oh, yeah. Right. They totally did. That's actually what I'm thinking of. You know what I did see? Obviously, I saw other stuff. I saw Lord of the Rings opening night, and I saw Star Trek Nemesis the weekend before that. So
I think about 3 weeks after 9/11, I was back traveling for work, and I had to pass through Houston. I had like a 4-hour layover, and my dad and stepmom at the time, or dad and stepmom lived there at the time, and so they met me at a movie theater near the airport, and we saw Rat Race, which was an interesting film to see. You know, there's a little bit of airplane hijinks or helicopter hijinks and stuff going on, but for the most part, it's
wasn't
pretty
it like a Mad World. Kind
it's
of?
Absolutely an updating of it's a Mad.
It had
world.
What's his name in it, right?
All of those.
Gosh, dang it! All of the what's their names? No, the comedian, the British guy did the.
Yes, Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan
Atkinson. Jeez.
Mr.
Had
Bings?
Him in it. Had a John Cleese. Had. Not Rick Moranis, but Dave Thomas, Bob and Doug. Dave Thomas had Whoopi Goldberg, Kathy Bates. I mean, it was a
weird.
You know, again, coming out like Bandits. If it had come out at any other time, it probably would have done a lot better than it did. But its timing was just so bad.
Yeah,
and it's probably why we see so many theaters quick to say, "Yeah, we're going to delay our movie a whole year right now with the pandemic going on." Yeah.
Holy poop! Shrek, the first Shrek movie, 2001.
Oh, wow. Yep. That started then too.
Beginning of a series.
Wow. I'm
telling you, that was the year. Yeah. My first movie that I saw after 9/11 was Zoolander.
Mm. Yeah.
I still haven't seen Zoolander. Should I do that?
Oh, you've never seen Zoolander?
Nope.
You should? I would think. Yeah, you don't have to see it, but I think you would probably understand some memes. It would probably help you with a few memes. That's about it.
Okay.
It is of a type.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, you gotta go with that type.
That's interesting. I mean, I there's nothing about the people in it I don't like. I don't know why I didn't.
If you find yourself saying, "Man, I wish I had more time to watch all the stuff that people are recommending to me," then really Zoolander shouldn't be the first thing you go to.
Right. That's a really good point. And that's funny that so it's funny to think about all these movies that performed poorly because of the timing, you know, a month after 9/11 or whatever, and they still had to release these things. These all feel like movies that might even just be straight up, "Hey, Netflix gave Barry Levinson a bunch of money. He's making a movie he really wants to make called Bandits, and it's with these people, and he's doing it for Netflix directly." Kind of like Scorsese did with his new thing. Like, that's this kind of movie to me. I don't know that this even gets made for theaters anymore, given how it's made. It's made not in a, "Hey, we're going to do the most blockbuster pleasy way possible." It's made in a kind of, "Hey, I'm going to make the film I want to make with the writing I want to do and with the people I want in it." And I feel like those today would maybe, that would be a Netflix original film. Or
this would definitely fall on Netflix now. This reminds me a lot of the movies during the late 90s that were, that ended up on straight to video because the budget was just right. I mean, there was plenty of movies like Patrick Swayze movies that went straight to video during that time where he was like, you know, a dad who was also a bank robber.
Yeah.
And just
best kind.
Yeah. Yeah. This, like I said, this elevated a little above that with a little bit bigger budget.
Yeah. Bigger budget. And at the time, probably bigger names. I mean, Kate Blanchett was just really getting going. She was
barely starting out.
She was like, what, 2 months away from Elf Queen. But she had done her Oscars nomination. Did she win? I don't remember. For the Queen thing. That was in the 90s, late 90s.
She did.
So she was a known quantity, but she was just getting started with like her mass appeal. But gosh dang it, let me just say this one more time. And I know I say it every time we do a movie with her in it. She's so freaking great and so attractive and so great and perfect in everything always. There's just nothing I can't watch her in. She's so freaking great. I'd love her. I'd love her. And look at her now. She's our age, Brian Ibbett. Just a,
she is
just as old as we are.
A couple months older than us. Yeah.
and she looks amazing, and it's not she all does. Plastic.
It's those Australian. It's whatever they do to the human body in Australia that makes it like never, fade, crack, sag, blister, or wrinkle.
I like the blisters in there, but she's just so good, and she's so. I don't know, compelling. She's one of the great movie stars of our modern time, and it's fun to watch her in a thing that's nearly 21 or 20 years ago, and that's also it feels really weird to say that, by the way. Like
she's about the only thing that's good about this movie that came out last year or earlier this year called Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Which I talked about on Recommendals because it was streaming on one of the services. And it's worth watching only for Cate Blanchett because she's fantastic in it. But it's basically about a wife who not really has had enough, but just decides that she wants to go on one last adventure and kind of
like this movie
splits off from her family and kind of except her husband isn't a dick in Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Like he is
they made him such a dick.
Yeah. I want to push
in Spain, so
I want to push that a little bit farther down the trail because that's a Richard Linklater film, and if you like the way Richard Linklater picks up a camera and walks around with it and captures people in the real world, that's a great movie. Like Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Is just a perfect little example of what Linklater can do. And Billy Crudup is always good. I don't know if
Kristen
you like
Wiig is manic and crazy in this.
I like Crudup.
I think you're underselling that movie.
I'll sell a little bit more. David Paymer, Lawrence Fishburne, Steve Zahn. He's got a great cast.
Steve Zahn. I could watch him.
God, I love Steve Zahn. He's like one of my not enough Steve Zahn.
I agree. What's going on with that? Yeah. How come Steve Zahn's not in everything?
He was going to kind of have that same trajectory that Sam Rockwell had, right? Where he's just basically never maybe the except for Moon, like the absolute center focus of a film, but playing these side characters that elevate the main characters that support the top build actors
and he's so good at it, and Steve Zahn same way, and he's so genuinely funny. Like that dude make me laugh in anything, so I'm with Dunaway. Like
we need more Zahn.
Zahn, please.
Like he's still with us. Let's do it.
One more thing about Linklater, like if you don't like Before Sunset and Before Midnight and Boyhood, if you don't like Boyhood, like you're not gonna like this movie at all. Like you will hate the movie.
Well, Brian, you love Boyhood, right? Like you're a big fan.
I really liked Boyhood.
Hey,
yeah,
I
don't know if it was my favorite movie of that year. What, 2017? 2016?
Yeah,
2017.
Yeah.
But I did really enjoy it. Yeah, I thought it was a really cool. Well,
we should actually say it's like your favorite film of 2003 to 2017, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Because you actually see this kid.
What else is in that category?
7 Up, 14 Up, and 21 Up, and
I used to love that series. That you know how? So Brian, you're always teasing me because I have like a thing with like age and years and stuff. Like I'm always obsessed about it. That documentary was made for people like me because you follow these kids. The Up series, you follow those kids from, what were they, 7 when they started in the 60s? And then they do it every 7 years, and they're up to those people are in their 60s or something now, or 70s maybe.
Oh, my
maybe.
God.
They would have to be,
Yeah, and it's infinitely fascinated by that because I've seen them as little kids, and then I saw them as teenagers, and then their 20s, and all the stuff they went through, and then now they're old, and what does that mean? And their own kids, and some of them are messed up, and some of them are all fine. And the drug guy turned out okay, and the guy you thought was perfect turned out to be terrible. And I don't know, there's something about that, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where they left off, where the most recent one was. 42 Up, it looks like.
Well, they're 50 something, I thought.
Well, they are now, but I mean, the first one came out.
No, I mean, I think I've seen one where they were in the
50s. Oh, really? Okay. 1964, so 5 years older than us. So they'd be 55.
They'd be 50. We'd be
well,
less.
They're older than that because they were 7 and 64.
Oh, they were 7 and 64. Right. So, right.
Right. Yeah. So they are
62 now.
62, is that the most recent?
So well, I accidentally stepped on.
Well, that's
on.
Not a multiple of 7.
Well, all right. That's a good point.
63
Stop
they could
it.
Do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm trying to see all the movies. Where's the movies? This is something worth seeing, by the way. I'm just putting it out there. It's
yeah.
unusual.
I had to go to a box set on Amazon to find it where you can get 7 up, 7 plus 7, 21 up, 28 up, 35 up, and 42 up.
Yeah.
This Michael whole time you've been Michael talking about this amazing epic of documentary. Just, all I can think about is national security because I'm still stuck on Steve Zahn.
Right.
Sorry.
And I want to apologize. I stepped on raising the issue of Cate Blanchett's husband, who is the portrayal of selfish carelessness, and that was as close as the movie got to losing me with the comic relief. Like I didn't hate it, but the husband behaving like he did was close.
Yeah.
63 up, by the way, it came out last year and that is the most recent
one. Oh, see, I haven't seen that one.
So there is a you did see 63. Yep, you weren't imagining.
I think I saw the 56 and up, but I knew there was another one. But yeah, I want to see that. Okay, sorry. Back to the thing, Randy. We didn't mean to
take that detour.
Well, I didn't know Mibbit and I had this common knowledge of this.
Oh, weird
thing.
Y'all should like lay in a bed with like a blanket between you two, and then you know it can fall down.
Get a divided room, you two.
Yeah,
all right. Come on. Hey, yeah. So they talked about that, and he said he saw it in a movie once, and he's right. And I was trying to remember what that movie was where they separated a bed. Maybe it's multiple movies. And I was thinking, is it some Like It Hot, or was
it was something like that? It was some.
I mean, it's been portrayed in several movies, but
like
I
like a Rock Hudson,
right?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what that would have been.
And there was nothing in the trivia about it, like
no, which surprised me.
It bummed me out.
Well,
yeah.
like it was inspired by that kind of thing, or
right? I mean, they talked about that you know him saying the line, "Oh yeah, I saw this in a movie once," and the movie ends with the couple getting married, and it's to set up. You know, Pink Boots and Harvey getting married.
Right.
And the movie he's talking about is It Happened One Night.
It Happened One Night. Okay.
That's it.
I almost threw that out there.
There you go. Happened One Night. Never saw it. Was that good? I have no idea. Is that a thing?
It's classic, man. Yeah. It's classic.
Yeah. Well, and let's just slap a trope alert on it because.
Whoop, oh, hold on. I got that right here.
I absolutely love this trope of there's not enough beds to go around. Somebody's going to have to share.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the most iconic is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, right?
Yeah.
Like
you never forget that. But man, I love it. Like no one ever sleeps on the floor in this situation.
Right.
Ever.
Nope. Right.
Nope. Like, why would you?
Well, that defangs the whole conflict. So yeah, you have to have them in there. By the way, It Happened One Night. 1934. I forgot that I went
way earlier
whole...
than
whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert.
Yeah, holy I shit. Forgot. I used to do the American Movie Class at AMC. I went through like almost 2 years where I just watched every freaking old classic that I could find. I guess this must have been in my list.
Here's how old it is. It's so old.
How old was it?
The actor, father of the guy who played the skipper on Gilligan's Island, looks to be the same age as the skipper was on Gilligan's Island.
Oh my lord!
That's old.
That's crazy.
When was Alan Hale Sr.?
Alan Hale Sr.?
Nice. Yes.
I wonder what sound he makes if you hit him in the gut with a hat or a belt.
Don't
like choking
it. Don't, little buddy.
Little buddy.
Goof.
That's amazing.
Is it Dolph? I think he says Dolph.
Does he say Dolph?
Dolph.
I don't know.
Dolph.
No, he says oop. Isn't it oop?
Okay, maybe it's more of that. Yeah.
It's like a oop. Can't remember. We watched the pilot for Current Geek, and I cannot remember a thing about it. Except that
you need another show called The Last Episode where they get off the island in that movie with
the Harlem Globetrotters?
Harlem Globetrotters.
That I have seen that, and it's horrific. Yeah. By the way, this is their original theme song. This and it was written by John Williams of all people. Listen to this.
I like that.
In tropical sea is a tropic port. Vacation fun is the favorite sport.
This is not, I'm not kidding either.
That's I'm glad that that's not it, but I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And it's great because the way it gets, the captain is fat and the thing is real, and he just keeps singing.
That's
and
not nearly as memorable, but also it is enjoyable.
For a three-route tour.
Yeah, he does. He talks about the tour, how long and how much luggage the Howells had and stuff. It's really weird.
Oh, that's funny.
Really weird. Anyway. Back to this awesome movie. I have some scrutiny. Let me get the scrutiny button out.
Hold okay.
On. Here's my scrutiny.
Scrutiny.
Billy Bob Thornton says in the trivia, Billy Bob Thornton has a phobia of antique furniture in real life, and the producers wrote it in as part of his character, but that's true of Billy Bob Thornton. I don't know if I believe that. I tried to find any kind of any sort of real thing about that, that fear, and there's no such thing I could find anywhere. I think they made that up. So scrutiny on that. Piece of trivia.
You call BS.
Right. I mean, that dude wears blood around his neck and freaking...
It doesn't mean he doesn't have a... I mean, it's actually the people who wear blood around their neck that probably would have a fear of antique furniture.
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty good point. I hadn't really thought of that. Because that dude...
I don't have a fear of antique furniture, but I do have a healthy respect for it.
Do you?
I have a fear that some of it might end up in my house.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I might open one of the drawers and some of that ancient air might escape like out of a mummy's tomb and like infect my body with some pandemic from 19...
Oh, weird. Wow. Okay, well, maybe you're onto something. Maybe there's a thing. This is a real deal. This is a thing, and you're just expressing, part of what is an actual phobia. I don't know. So maybe I'm wrong.
Didn't say why he was phobic of it. Just said he was.
Maybe there shouldn't be any scrutiny here. There's also some cool trivia about Val Kilmer originally considered for the part of Joe, and then Bruce Willis was going to play the part of Terry. So they had this whole switcheroo.
Oh no,
gonna go
I'm
on.
Glad they didn't do that. First of all, Billy Bob Thornton was perfect for the character Terry in the way that it was presented. And I really feel like Bruce Willis could have been replaced by a lot.
You could have had, he could have easily have been Val Kilmer.
Yeah.
Or anybody else of the 2000, early 2000s fame. They could have totally played Bruce Willis's character. Not a problem.
I don't think the character really requested much more. So I don't think Bruce Willis was at fault here. I just think that was just.
Bruce Willis was almost too affable for the role.
Right.
Like there's more than one moment where he smiles or laughs at something and it's nice, but it's almost like, I don't know. He's like, I kind of need him to remain an inscrutable criminal, you know,
like a Peter Stormare from Fargo kind of character. Yeah, would have been ideal.
Yeah. A little bit more on. Yes. I'm ready to pop off any second. Just ready to break. Yeah. That would have been good. Yeah.
Although then you probably wouldn't have seen. I mean, it probably wouldn't have made sense that Cate Blanchett would have been just as attracted to him as she was to Billy Bob Thornton.
Good point. There's some music trivia. Hans Zimmer was the only choice for the music composing at the time. However, Zimmer was just finishing Hannibal, which is in 01. He was finishing Pearl Harbor at the same time, which is also 01, and was in London. He'd already committed himself to Black Hawk Down, which is an amazing soundtrack, by the way, which is also 2001. And that was being recorded in the U.S., so Levinson had to change it. And he said he couldn't do it. So yeah, I guess he worked on Rain Man, and that's why they wanted to work together again.
Definitely worked on Rain Man.
Yeah, definitely. He's got to watch that.
I thought that the music in this movie was surprisingly timeless. Like, I was expecting to feel, oh, yeah, wow, 2001, you shouldn't have done that. But no, they used popular music that was, at that time, like 15 and 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it just kind of works and it doesn't take you away.
When Beautiful Day, U2's Beautiful Day came up, I thought, no way was that. I could have sworn that came out after 2001, but no, it came out in 1996. And it's funny because the first concert I went to after 9/11 was U2 at the Pepsi Center and would have been there, All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Oh, right. Tour. That was that tour. Yeah.
That though, that's the closing song, right? That's the roll.
You hear it twice in the movie.
Yeah,
you hear
they have it earlier
in the middle of the movie, and then it is the credits song as well.
You gotta agree with me. Top 10 sunset and credits songs, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it fits perfectly.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, I
just put
you're
it
not
on
gonna
the
put
end.
It at the end of like Usual Suspects, but if it's like if it is like your characters are going off into the sunset, like you described, then it's a good choice.
Yeah. Overall, just all the choices for pop music, but also having it meld real well with whatever score they had. I mean, it wasn't like a score that jumped out at me, but it was enough for me to keep everything moving. It was great. Even the weird, some of the weird, like, I don't know, honky-tonky stuff that they were playing in the background kind of lightly a lot. Didn't know what it was, but it felt like it was right for the stuff. And I don't know, man.
A lot of the movies had, like, a lot of the songs that picked had subtext to the what was going on screen, which I always appreciate and enjoy because it's real easy to get that wrong.
And that guy, that the banker guy that fainted, I love that actor, by the way.
He's the jump to conclusions Matt guy from Office Space.
Yes, yeah. That guy. I love that guy anyway. But this movie somehow managed to make this obvious pratfall hokey jokey thing that you would put in a movie still made it work for me totally and completely. I was like, every time he fell and they were like, ah, shit, he's down again, I'm laughing because
this is backwoods charm, kind of like small town.
Yeah, they just Goober nailed it. Kind of thing. They just nailed that stuff, and it could have been so much worse in the wrong hands. And I don't know. I know I've lavished praise on Barry Levinson today, but I just feel strongly that that dude is the real deal, man. And it, he's doing stuff still these days, but you never hear about a major Barry Levinson film anymore, which bums me out because.
Yeah, Richard Reel, by the way, is the actor's name, and he's he's almost Wilford Brimley Walrus level, but.
I love him in Grounded for Life. If you've never watched that series,
no.
Wilford Brimley, what?
He, you know, I'd like to know. He's a, what'd you call? He's got Wilford Brimley.
Wilford Brimley Walrus level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wilford Brimley Walrus level orange.
Yeah.
Not quite Wilford Brimley Walrus level red. He has got, I'm just a rough guess here, about 14, 15 things in pre production, post production, filming completed. And ready to come out.
He's a busy boy.
He's a busy man.
I mean, he's got this look that it's like, we need somebody who looks like that. Well, let's just get that guy because he's exactly who you need.
It's like, hey guys, we need a kind of a aging retired cop. Who do we hire? And it needs to be kind of funny. Oh, okay, that guy. Bring him in. He's perfect for it. And I feel like I've seen him in a million like cameos on TV, and
he's like, always on TV.
I love those kind of TV characters.
Seeing him. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, look at how many things he's got on his list. Let's see here. What is his? His filmography, 405 credits in his filmography.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my God. So he's such a funny guy.
Like, porn stars don't have that many films in their filmography.
He's such a funny guy, but I see he was in the Young and the Restless for a while. Oh, for like
Young and
10
the Restless.
Or more episodes. Oh, I'd like to see just that stupidity.
Yeah, I wonder what he did in there. What do you think he played? It wasn't some romantic lead, I'm sure.
No, he was the Warden McQueen. I would like to see him play straight.
The Warden McQueen? Fun.
Yeah, he could easily play a warden. It's like any sort of blue collar job you need, sheriff or deputy or.
Well, he's great in Grounded for Life. Like I said, if you haven't ever watched that,
I haven't. No,
you never seen Grounded
never
for
heard
Life?
Never heard of it.
You never even heard of it? Never gosh! It. Well, you know, Logue, right? Is it Donald Logue? Is
how Donald you say Logue, his name? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he's been in a million things, but he had a great little family sitcom back during the early 2000s. Actually, 2001 is when it started.
Really? Oh, wow. And, interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, we just saw Donald Logue in something for FilmSack because I remember talking about the name Donald
Ghost
Logue.
Rider.
Right.
Ghost Rider. He was his buddy. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fun little family. No, I did see that show. I forgot. Yeah. Okay. I just forgot he was in it. I did see that show. That was a great little show. It was a funny show.
I love that little show.
It was like a little, they were kind of rednecky and,
except they were, they weren't rednecky as much as just. Lower.
They were common folk.
Low class. Common folk. There you go.
For lack
there
of
you
a better
go.
Term.
Common folk.
All right. I didn't know he was in that. So maybe I have to watch that.
Oh, he was the dad. He did a great job. At that.
Well, all right then. Well done, that guy. Did I tell you why Val Kilmer couldn't do it? He was doing. What was he doing? He was in some other movie.
Was he doing Tombstone?
No, it was something. Tombstone was 94. That was a long time before this. It may have been that.
The Saint. Saint.
Oh, The Saint may have been it. Actually, you might be right. Isn't that about 2001, 2000, something like that?
Feels like it.
Still don't like
Could
The Saint.
Be wrong.
I know you guys like The Saint. I don't like The Saint.
Whatever.
It's not great. Here's a fun story. Cate Blanchett starred in The Gift, which was written by Billy Bob Thornton.
What?
Yeah, that came out a year before that. Billy Bob Thornton, a man of many talents. And I love him.
Whatever. If you have not heard of the Boxmasters, it's a band that Billy Bob Thornton fronted for a while, two or three albums. They did one album that was all honky-tonk covers. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But they were doing interviews, and there's an interview that you can find on YouTube, and I can't remember who it's with. I want to say BBC. What is it?
John Gomeshi.
It is. So you've heard this. And he
as far as I'm concerned, it's the most famous thing that Billy Bob Thornton ever did in real life.
Mm.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
His interview with John Gomeshi is like that time that Joaquin Phoenix was on David Letterman. Like, it's like that level of thing.
Notoriety. Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
He just basically gets angry because the interviewer decides to bring up Billy Bob's movie career and say, well, what's it like, you know, going from being an actor to being a musician? I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here as part of this band. We don't want to talk about my acting career. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the first question and answer.
Yeah.
That's the first question and answer is Billy Bob Thornton saying he's not going to talk about this thing. And then no matter what John Gomeshi says to him, he's not going to talk.
Right.
He checks out of the interview from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so then it's like 9 minutes of awkwardness.
Right.
And it's just like, it will make you hate Billy Bob Thornton if you've never watched.
How about that time you dated, you were married to Angelina Jolie?
Yeah. We ain't talking about that. We're talking about this band here that I'm in. So that's funny you brought up Tombstone earlier, Dunaway, because he was in Tombstone. He was a fat Billy Bob Thornton in Tombstone.
Yes.
And he was beating up somebody while he was trying to run a poker table. And then,
right, I'll be your Huckleberry.
Yeah, and then what's his name came in and just pistol whipped the shit out of him.
Yeah,
so Kurt Russell.
Yeah, Kurt Russell. That was a great scene. That's my first exposure to Billy Bob Thornton. I'll never forget it.
But I'm sure there's probably someone that didn't listen to this episode of this podcast because of Billy Bob Thornton's performance on an interview show with John Gomeshi. Like, it is so horrible. It's really you could boycott him for the rest of his career based on this one,
because he was just kind of an a-hole.
Yeah.
Well,
hey, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah,
I love Billy Bob Thornton.
Bale's railing on the light guy. It's
right. Yeah. Well, I love Billy Bob Thornton. Aside,
yeah,
yeah.
But you ever ask yourself, it's like, oh well, how do you end up with her?
Yeah.
She's pretty attractive. What do the ladies see in the Billy Bob Thornton? Because he always seems to have a,
because he's an auteur, man. He's an auteur. He's like a.
I must be, because when I look at him, I don't go, well, you know, I look at Brad Pitt and I go, well, of course, Angelina Jolie. Of course.
Well,
that takes you to the most 2001-iest trope in the movie. And they look at the tropes of this time frame, even like this like 10 or 15 years. And that is the manic pixie dream girl that Kate is, because filmmakers now have been browbeaten to the point where they're trying really hard to not make films with manic pixie dream girls in them. They're still failing and doing so. Yeah. But like, this is like peak manic pixie dream girl. Like, this is.
Give me another example. Who else would we put in that category?
Natalie Portman and Garden State.
Good example.
Yeah.
Any film where the girl is entirely an object of a man's sexual desire, gives herself to him without having any standards of her own, and is also perfect and quirky and beautiful and all that stuff. Like, she's
Melanie Griffith in that movie with Ray Liotta, Something Wild.
Oh yeah, so, yeah, yeah. Yep, that's a great early example.
Once again, I want to go back to the. Not that I think Billy Bob Thornton's not an attractive guy. I just don't want anybody to get. But like I said, I don't like to ever like shame. I'm not really shaming.
You're not a body shamer guy. I get it.
He's just he's just not like I said. You would just look at him and go, oh well, you know, he can totally land a supermodel.
And I flat out disagree with you. Like there again, it's all about the cinematography for me. But there are shots of Billy Bob Thornton in this movie where I'm like, wow.
Right.
That's a handsome man.
Yeah.
Well, here, let me send you a picture of Billy Bob Thornton.
I totally get what you're saying. And I think I agree with it.
Right. Like when I see Billy Bob Thornton, I kind of like, hey, you know, that feels like kind of looks like me. You know, we're kind of cool. We can hang out together. You know, we're on the same, you know, level. You know, we're all about a five, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not threes or anything, but you know, we're
five.
Not,
right.
Right. We're not like, you know.
I think that he's probably got a million charms. Most of them are things
Has
like confidence and artistic you know, ambition,
dedication and to his craft and
all that. And he's kind of weird. And, you know, if you're in that world, you're like, man, I want to get with that weird dude because he's doing weird stuff. And, you know, he might say French fried taters at night or whatever.
20 years ago, a film like this was not required to explain why the woman is doing what she's doing. It just portrays her, and she is every man's dream that some, you know, broken wife is going to just fall into your groin. And, you know, like, it's great.
Yeah.
But it comes close to kind of being bad in that regard.
A little bit. It's I could see it. I think she plays it well enough to make me go, oh, well, what this is someone who's trapped in the worst possible marriage loop with this dude who sucks and of artificial life, and she can't find happiness. And she's just given herself over to this weird new thing. She's found a new life, and I bought it because she's so damn good at it. Right. If it had been any other actress, maybe less so, but I don't know. Something.
Well, I just want to go back to Billy Bob Thornton here for just a second. Just say,
yeah.
He's a really talented guy. That's what it must be. It must be him. Like, you know, just no. I'm just saying. There's other things. There's other things than just, you know, physical looks. You know, he's a little bit taller too, so maybe that gives him a few points. Plus, you know, like you said, he is. You know, he's quite the talented man. And really smart. So
yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm with you.
If you're just looking at pictures,
if that's all you're doing, if you're going off initial two-dimensional look at this man, your initial physical reaction, if that's what you're thinking of, then
right.
Oh, by the way, major Armageddon connection here. Both these dudes were Bruce Willis and Billy Bob were in Armageddon. Billy Bob was the government NASA dude who was like always on the line going, all right, now what you need to do is stick it in the rear or whatever. And then you had. then you had Bruce Willis out there getting the work done. So back together at last, 3 or 4 years later, Bruce Willis and Billy Bob.
Yeah.
Here's what made me gross out. All right, you guys have to guess what grossed me out.
Oh, it's easy.
Okay.
Even though as attractive as she is, Kate Blanchett sticking her finger in her mouth, brushing her teeth.
Yep, that was it. Ding, 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 ding. Totally nailed it without even trying to do it hard. It was also gross hearing about how much spit she had. Thanks a lot, Bruce Willis. Yeah. Don't care. Right.
Just a lot of saliva.
Yeah. What do you do? Why are you saying that? Ugh.
And it wasn't really gross when she was just like moving her finger around and brushing her teeth, but when she actually just stopped while Billy Bob Thornton, you know, pontificated for about how many germs on her hand.
Yeah.
And she just stood there with her finger sticking in her mouth while, you know, she was drooling down her hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah, that grossed me out. It didn't. And I figured some of you guys might say, oh, was it the tape in the car where it talked about vaginitis or whatever? I'm like, no, that's just a thing people have.
Once again, like, Levinson films are going to have comic relief. Like, some of them are going to be a comedy, right? Like, or a tragic comedy. What do you call Good Morning Vietnam? Tragic comedy?
Comedy in a tragic time?
Not really dark comedy.
Anyway, Barry Levinson knows how to crack a joke on screen. And, like, there were moments in this film where he almost took it too far. Yeah. And that was one of them.
I forgot. For a hot second, he did Good Morning Vietnam, and it also makes sense because he's great. Gosh dang it. He's so good. By the way, let's just see what he's up to. Let's see what movie we got coming
What's he doing? Because you know he's got talent.
He's got a series called, he's executive producing a series called The Jury Room, which is almost ready to come out. As far as direction goes, he's also directing that series. Something called Sheila is in pre-production. Harry Haft, whatever this is in post production. Something called
What Grows Brian Out the Most.
Right.
His last film was 2015's Rock the Casbah, and I don't know what that was. Let's see. Oh, it's a Bill Murray thing. What is this?
Yeah, I remember seeing previews for that.
Oh, Bill Murray, Bruce Willis, Kate Hudson, Zoe Deschanel. The big cast. Scott Kahn's in this. Danny McBride. I don't know how this went or how it went down. Yeah, I don't know about it.
Probably not well if we don't know anything.
What was it called again?
About Rock the Casbah.
Rock the Casbah. You know, like the song.
The problem, you haven't to say the problem was that the theaters was like, no, I'm not putting it up there. I'm not putting that on the marquee. I can't spell Casbah.
Says a down on his luck music manager, played by Murray, discovers a teenage girl with an extraordinary voice while on a music tour in Afghanistan, takes her to Kabul to compete in the popular television show Afghan Star.
Oh, I've actually seen this. I remember this. It had a very short time at the theater, and I remember it was on Vudu forever, just tempting me, and I was finally like, okay, fine. There's a couple of movies that year.
Yeah, how was it?
2015 seems like wasn't 2015. Honestly, it was. I think I was doing other things. I turned it on. I think I got this one.
Uh-huh.
And the other movie that I remember that I kind of only halfway watched was WTF, the Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was like a couple of movies that I kept picking up, and I was like, was halfway watching, and it seems like it was.
Well, based on the red carpet photos on IMDb, they even let the homeless people in.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's Fred Durst.
Oh, that's Fred Durst. Yeah, yeah. Now, it's easy to confuse him with the homeless people. I get it.
Right.
The Humbling was the year before that, and I remember hearing about that, but didn't see it again. It's a Al Pacino, Greta Gerwig thing that I never saw. So I don't know. The recent Levinson is hard to suss out. I don't know what to like or not or whatever. He's past his prime probably, but, you know, you do what you can do. Charles Grodin is in that. Oh, man, I haven't heard that name.
Oh.
Grodin.
Do you guys remember Midnight Run? We should sack Midnight Run.
Did we not watch that?
No, we should sack it. We should sack it. Midnight Run is a classic.
Wait, how old is that movie now? Because it feels like it was just a couple of years old.
88 or
what? Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of something else then.
What are you thinking of?
I don't know. I remember a Midnight Run, but it wasn't that.
Midnight Run, 1980. Yeah, 1988 was Midnight Run, and it was amazing. If you've never seen that movie.
De Niro, Grodin.
Yeah. It's so good. Yaphet Kotto is in it.
So the trivia, or maybe it was the goofs on IMDb, reminded me of what could be the chick in the bucket on this film.
Oh, yeah, hold on. I got to play the thing.
Don't you know it's dangerous to leave a bucket lying around?
All right, go ahead.
It's the money that they get away with at the end. You know, they can explain away the fact that the ambulance burned up and the bodies were in there, and so there's no trace of the Joe and the
right. Joe and Terry.
Joe and Terry. But what, you know, wouldn't the bank like, well, what happened to the money? Like
they had mentioned it like it was in the ambulance and it burned up with the other things, but like why would the ambulance guys do
pick
that?
Up money as well, yeah.
That's a pretty good question.
It was definitely not worth it.
Also, how'd they get out of the ambulance at all?
In a tunnel.
Oh, I forgot about that stupid tunnel.
Oh, the tunnel. Yeah.
Never
mind.
They
were in a tunnel. They got out of their body bags into cars and drove out. Meanwhile, the ambulance kept going with the...
Right.
I think the husband is the chick in the bucket. For as far as I can tell, he's still in Spain. And
maybe
there forever.
maybe yeah. there forever. But if you need to get a hold of him, you know who's... You can reach his people. You know who they are.
Yeah. You belong at home, baby. Come home.
Now I just really want to see Midnight Run. That's all I care about at this point. All right.
I do too. I think I saw Midnight Run one time like 25 years ago, and I would like to watch it because I don't remember it at all.
Great Danny Elfman score on that one.
Oh, yeah. Totally agree.
How does that director make it makes Midnight Run, Beverly Hills Cop, Scent of a Woman, Meet Joe Black, and then Geely or whatever the hell the name of that horrible shit thing from 2003 with Affleck in it. How did that happen?
I'm fine. You know what? I have always been fine with a director going, you know what? There's a thing that I'm really good at and I've done it. And now I want to try other things. Even though I give crap to Steven Spielberg all the time when he went out on his little, AI tour and Minority Report. I give him a lot of crap, but you know, as I get older, I'm like, yeah, so what? So he decided to explore a little bit, even though they're really talented at something. It's really hard to look at somebody and see them really talented at something, and then flip to something else and like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but
like
normally the next year you get a better thing.
Yeah,
but he didn't do anything else. He stopped at Geely.
Maybe he was done. Maybe he was just.
I would be done too after Geely. It's terrible.
Would we ever consider watching Geely for Film Sack because it is so notoriously bad?
Yes. Probably, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think we'd have to, right? Like,
I do like the fact that when you look it up on Just Watch, I looked up to see if it was streaming before I asked that question. but it said people who liked Gigli also liked Battlefield Earth and Catwoman.
No way, dude. Are you serious?
People were just taking a tour of crap movies, and then it gets stuck as your favorite.
Yeah.
The Master of Disguise, the Dana Carvey thing that I know you guys like, but I don't like. All About
I do
Steve.
Not like. Are you kidding? That is a horrible movie.
I think somebody likes Dana Carvey, Master of Disguise. The Room is listed. Yeah, if you like Sheely, you like The People also like The Room.
Like?
Wow.
Are they sure about like?
Yeah.
It is said, the way it's phrased, people who like Sheely also liked.
I prefer the based on what you've watched. That's how I prefer them to phrase
that. That'd be better. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Do it right.
By the way, I was thinking of Midnight Special from 2016 when we were talking about Midnight Room.
How's that? Was that good?
I liked it. It was really. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I can't think of even what that is, but I'll take your word for it.
There's a kid with special powers, and they're on the run.
Oh, and, yes.
That looks like Adam Driver in that photo. It is Adam Driver.
It is.
Yeah, Michael.
Oh, I've never seen this. Yeah.
Michael Shannon's
in it.
And there's
alien stuff at the end. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing about this, thinking I should check it out and never did.
And it's on Hulu right now.
Yeah, I've seen this, and I think I talked about it on Recommendals, as a matter of fact.
You know, I have a Michael Shannon rule. I see it if he's in it. I don't care what it is.
Yeah, I forgot about this. This is really good.
Oh, is he in it?
Yeah. I'll see it. If it's a piece of shit, I'll see it because he's in it.
He's the main guy protecting this kid is Michael Shannon. Yeah. So
I love him.
I have seen Midnight
Run. This might as well be a Michael Shannon film because it's that much of him in it.
For sure. Mm. All right. We all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? There's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. Did you know this? Well, many of us are stuck at home. It's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch on Netflix. So this week I've been using ExpressVPN to binge Doctor Who on UK Netflix, Star Trek Discovery on Netflix UK. How about Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix Canada, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on Netflix Australia, Black Adder on Netflix UK. Oh, I love me some Blackadder. It's so simple to do. You just fire up the ExpressVPN app, just no matter what your computer platform is. I'm on a Mac in this particular case. Change my location to the UK, refresh Netflix, and that's it. See, ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries, so just think about all the Netflix libraries you can go through. That's a lot. Do you love anime? Well, they let you have access to Japanese Netflix and be spirited away. Get it? But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service, Hulu, BBC, iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there. But the reason I use ExpressVPN is to watch shows and do it ridiculously speedily. That's a better word. There's never any buffering or lag. I tried it multiple times. There was none. You can stream HD and no problem. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all your devices, phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. You can watch what you want on a personal device or on your big screen, wherever you are, wherever you want to. You just do it. Anyway, I really like it a lot. I've been pretty impressed with it. And none of this even goes into the other great reasons why a good VPN can help you in lots of security situations. But this is one great reason. Your FilmSack-like entertainment. Very easy to use, super simple to set up. I mean, I was up and running in like 3 seconds. And you can be too. If you visit our special link right now at expressvpn.com/filmsack, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/filmsack. And do it today. Let's do some clips. I have some clips.
Yeah.
And they are forthcoming. Hold on a second.
Soon.
Beavers and Ducks.
Here they are. I found them. Okay. We're going to start with this one. This is just a thing.
Trapped like a rat.
Oh, trapped like a rat.
Trapped like a rat.
Just fun the way he said it.
Trapped like a rat.
You almost make a song out of it. Like get a beat behind it.
Well,
trapped like a rat.
Trapped like a rat.
It can't be his voice. That can't be the thing that ladies like. Is that? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. This is good. Your continued investigation is encouraged, and also I'm enjoying the hell out of it. So please continue. All right. Here's a radio sound, sports radio sounding guy. This is the guy that Randy reminded us is a comedian, but he always sounds like sports radio to me. Here he is.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Darren Head, and tonight we have an incredible story for you. It's a story that's part soap opera, part crime drama, story of betrayal and greed. It's part Bonnie and Clyde. It's part Barnum and Bailey.
It just seems like the guy should be going, oh, I can't believe you see the 76ers last night. That was a terrible play. Mm-hmm.
He's got like maybe clear your throat, maybe, yeah. And then do another take.
Yeah, try it again. All right,
here's... And he's trying to be a take on John Walsh, right?
The
America's Most Wanted guy?
Sure. I assume. Yeah. I don't know. That show felt very familiar in that way, yeah.
It felt more like a Geraldo, but... Yeah, something like that.
That's a good example, too.
Sure. Geraldo. We found nothing in Capone's tomb. Nice work. All right. Here is Billy Bob sounds. It's one of his weird ticks. That's pretty good. All right. I like this line. You boned me on the pants, Joe. Here you go.
You boned me on the pants, Joe.
I like that line.
That's really great. That's not good out of context. That's not good at all.
I just love that.
So glad
line.
That wasn't prom audio.
Right.
No kidding, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah. So here's some more pants reference.
Oh, those are wicked pants.
I love it because, again, comic relief. Like, it's a throwback joke, like a few seconds after the previous one.
Yeah.
It's great.
I also want to give fat credit to the scene where he's in the first family's house. And they're all trying to eat dinner, and Billy Bob's being very conversational, talking about how she makes the food. The mom cannot stop sobbing, but she's playing along and answering questions. The kids kind of don't care. The husband's just the worst. Like, I loved that scene.
Yeah. And those kids, by the way, Bruce Willis's real kids.
Saw that. I didn't know the boy was. The girl, I knew the girl was, but that's funny.
Yeah, two girls.
Two girls.
Both girls, yeah.
Was it two girls?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Apple and, not Apple. What's her name?
Tallulah and Scout.
Scout, that's it. I always want to say Apple, and it's not. It's Scout. All right, anyway,
Apple is Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin.
Oh, that's right. Well.
Yeah, but what? How do you say Elon Musk?
They were all yellow.
Child.
Oh, yeah.
They were all yellow.
12.
There's a talk that's an illegal naming convention in California, and so they're going to have to not do it.
They're going to have to truncate it?
Yeah, they're going to have to come up with something better. So
yeah, you can't put numbers or non-English characters to a name.
Jeez, Elon Musk, you freaking weirdo.
Whatever that A.
Spell
what
it phonically.
He's a weirdo.
The world today, having to use legal precedents to have your child's name fixed.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, here's one of Bruce Willis's girls doing this.
Want to see something cool that I can do?
Sure.
Again, it's a dumb throwaway thing to do, and if you don't see the movie, you won't really get this, but there's something about the way it's done and the tone of that dinner, everything else around it, that just feels good. It's good.
Right.
It's not cheap. Can't explain it. All right. This is quite the tape to have in your car.
The most common symptom of vaginitis is an abnormal vaginal discharge, often probably from an allergic reaction to mites.
Ooh. All right.
Oh.
I don't know what he said in the middle of that, but okay.
This movie was made days before Barry Levinson's generation discovered the existence of MP3s.
That sounds about right.
It's, and a lot of things. Like, this movie is really, really stuck in a time technologically. Like, just the fact that, you know, they have pagers. There's not, you know.
Yeah,
like,
we have cell phones then, but I don't know why they didn't. They were not using
them. I thought they kind of explained that a little bit because Billy Bob Thornton was amazed and he couldn't understand OnStar, which kind of represents people who've been in prison for a long time. They come out in the technologies they haven't been exposed to.
Oh, so they're where's that sound coming from? Sure, yeah.
But every cop on the Western Seaboard doesn't have the technology of a thing called the radio. Like, it's this movie is... It's kind of desperate about tech.
Yeah, the tech's a little weird. It could have been from the 70s in a weird way, except for the music and the modern look of everything. All right, here's an amazing Bruce Willis laugh. Whoops, why didn't it play? Here we go. There you go.
That's so Bruce Willis.
Yeah. It reminds me of like, I don't know, something.
Now, see, I can see Bruce Willis with, you know, an attractive. You know, he's got something. Yeah. You just look at a picture of him and go, oh, yeah, totally. I can see him with, you know.
It's one of my favorite bits you've ever done. I love it. Okay, here's Irish something.
The thing about Irish hurling is that it's like football with sticks.
Stop it. Stop it.
Oh, I love how he's always chewing him out.
Stop it.
I'm going to keep that one for stuff.
Stop it.
Yeah.
And that's the Billy Bob Thornton I want. Like, I want him to be outraged and smart, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that he's the brains of the operations, but he's also a freaking mess. There's something great about his, and it's him do it's what it's how he did it. Like I again in the wrong hands, this doesn't work. But he's very good. All right, here's Kate Blanchett, and she's just being great as always.
So, you robbed banks. Well, that's impressive. What, it's a little old lady savings accounts and Cub Scout dues and homeless orphan Christmas funds? Is that what?
Her accent was wavering a little bit there.
Though. A little bit. Yeah, she had a mouthful of the Denver, so she had to. Here's this thing.
Beavers and ducks.
He wakes up from his dream.
So, is there any trivia to that? I didn't look it up.
No, but, you know, just,
it's two so competing college football teams.
Oh.
In the northwest, but that's about it.
I love how he comes out of it though. You can hear it.
Beavers and ducks.
So he kind of starts with a so he goes beavers and ducks.
Yeah, and then Kate Blanchett later on calls him a beaver, and I was like, okay, so
yeah, maybe there's some connection. I think he's just nuts and has weird dreams about stuff that scares him, and I think that was it. Here's some singing.
Once upon a time, I was falling in love.
Sort of.
Now I'm only falling apart.
Then.
Nothing I can do. Total eclipse of the heart.
All right.
I'm not sure if Kate Blanchett can sing or not because of a scene later in the movie.
She can totally sing. She faked that because I've heard her sing and she can sing.
I was thinking she did a pretty good bad job of singing. That was interesting.
All right. Here's gross thing number two that I didn't mention.
She's got saliva.
Well, we did mention it, but here it is.
She's got saliva in her mouth. Well, of course, she's got saliva in her mouth. Everybody does this glandular.
She's got more. Really? How much?
Why would that be a thing you'd say? You'd just say, oh, she's a good kisser. You wouldn't go, oh, man, the volume of saliva in her mouth was amazing. It's like
awful that was lot.
That was the second description of a kiss. I prefer Kate Blanchett's description of her husband's first kiss.
Yeah.
With the open mouth.
Yeah.
Popping to the jaw.
Yeah, that was fun, that little conversation. Yeah. Here's the antique furniture thing.
And antique furniture scares me half to death.
I really want that trivia to be true, but I feel scrutiny about it. All right, here's another weird Bruce Willis laugh. So we got two of those.
Wow, that was a different one than the first one?
It was, yep. They're close, okay. But they're different ones. And then finally, a great gunshot sound. I love them in movies. I always respect them. Here's one here. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
That was really well, too, because the gunshot and then there was a delay before the scream. It had been real easy to time that wrong, but it felt very real.
The movie had great sound work. Never felt like I heard anybody doing ADR. I never felt like weird off-sounding moments of dialogue where they were in a booth and not in the real place. It just, you know, for whatever it's worth, for a movie like this, really good sound work. And it's 20 years old, which is crazy. All right. Now time for this. Nope. That's not the one. Film side checklist. Bruce Willis should do the long hair thing more. Check. I like that. Scraggly old Bruce Willis hair is cool. I smell burning feathers. Check. And finally, put Kate Blanchett in all the movies. Thanks. Check. All right. Hey, Star Trek connections. We got a couple. Scott Burkholder was the Wildwood policeman in DS9. He played a commander, and in Enterprise played Tarek Relius Tagrim in a second season episode called The Catwalk. He also had Richard Reel.
That's our Wilford Brimley guy.
Oh, he has a hard last name. Lawrence Fife in this. In the TNG, played Batty in the fifth episode, The Inner Light. And in Voyager, played Seamus in the season six episode, Fair Haven and Spirit Folk. Same character. And on Enterprise, played Dr. Jeremy Lucas in the fourth season episode, Cold Station 12. So there's that. Also, Bill Blair was a bank security guard. He was on DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, played various Cardassians, Jem Hadar, and Klingons, and different Vulcans as well. Lots of nice Star Trek.
Played a variety of Vulcans.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Soundtrack, great. I give it a P for perfect for what it is. Just right stuff. Good call on all around. I think it was good. Nothing wrong with any of it. All right. Twitter post. This is wherein you guys say things in 280 characters or less that describe this film to a T. Let's start with Randy.
Bandits. Two guys having sex with the same woman who left her husband to be here. And one of them brought his best friend, and that guy brought his girlfriend, and she's inexplicably involved in what you're all doing with each other, just like a Saturday night at Evan's house.
Yes! That's where it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Dunaway.
Bandits, some dialogue soup. Below my belt and above my knees, my spaghetti's too long and the sauce is too red. I hate it. Do you guys smell burning feathers?
The sauce is too red. I forgot about that kid.
Yeah.
The sauce is too red.
That kind
My
of stuff.
My spaghetti's too long.
I don't like it. Yeah, your spaghetti's too long. It's the nature of spaghetti.
Exactly.
Can you cut it up for me, Ma?
That kid's in trouble. All right. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Bandits. Nothing I can say. Totally eclipsed by 9/11.
Oh, man. That's so true. Truth, Brian. Truth. Well done.
True.
All right, for real, here is the alternate titles. These were almost used. It was almost called Die Hard 8 Fake Die, because get it, they died fakely at the end. They didn't really die. Mm-hmm. Or the movie, or sorry, this movie Heist to be Seen. Oh, wow. Oh gosh, that's just rough. All right, moving on to emails. These came to us to our email address, filmsack@gmail.com. Sometimes you can use the website as well, where you just send them on a form there. Either way,
it
works.
Sometimes you can use the website, yeah, or all the time. You can also additionally use the website.
That is a way better way of putting it. Thank you for that. Amy wrote in, says, "Hey, Scott and Brian and Randy, the quote from Pump Up the Volume is actually eat your cereal with a fork and do your homework in the dark." Amy. So Amy wanted to let us know that.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yep.
Also, Craig Shirtliff wrote in, and I have a question for Craig. Are you the Craig Shirtliff I grew up with? Because I grew up with a kid named Craig Shirtliff, and I'm very
curious
about
that's it. Such a common name. It really could be any of the Craig Shirtliffs.
I know at least three.
Yeah, I know at least one.
That's like my buddy Robert Miller.
Oh man,
just like that.
Exactly. Anyway, he says the subject is Film Sack and Raw Deal. He says a very short message. He says Raw Deal is just the price we have to pay for enjoying the Terminator. That's interesting, because wasn't the
true story.
Is the
true
deal
story.
Was it the deal because the producers had, or no, he had a contract and had to do something?
Yep.
Okay.
And I just want to say again, like I said it last week, I think if you told me, hey, you can watch a movie right now, it'll be the first Terminator or Raw Deal, I might choose Raw Deal.
I
liked it.
You liked it more than, I mean, if you just had to pick, you're saying there are the two movies on the table.
Today.
You have to watch one of those today. You would take Raw Deal over a Terminator rewatch. Is that what you're telling me?
I might, yeah.
That's intense.
I really He's like backpedaling. Yes, probably, most likely.
I just watched Raw Deal a week ago, and I haven't seen the first Terminator in like a year. So there's that's a problem.
Watch your feet. There's a lot of backpedaling coming over. Look out.
I know I'll never have to do this for real, so yes.
Yeah. Well, let me check.
I like what I call small action movies. Yeah. And after we sacked Raw Deal, I went looking for Walking Tall, the rock version, because I just want to I like that thing. And it's also got that Neil McDonough guy as the bad guy.
Oh yeah. I like Walking Tall. Walking Tall is fun. We should do that on here. I like Walking Tall.
I thought we did Walking Tall.
No,
we did the other one.
Rundown.
Running Short.
Running Short.
What was it?
It's the Rundown. The Rundown.
Oh, the Rundown. Yeah. I bought the five film pack of Rambo on Vudu for $20.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah. I'm watching them backwards because the other way seems depressing. I don't know why.
That's a great idea to do with a Rambo movie, is watch them all in reverse order. I like it.
Like I say, any way, any order you watch them, they're depressing because Stallone just has this sadistic desire to depress you, but with that character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, by the way, Arnold has something to say about you choosing Rod Deal over Terminator. This is it.
He molested, murdered, and mutilated her.
All right. That's what he has to say. Yeah. All right. That's it for emails. Next week, Final Destination 2. Yeah, that's what? Right. That's right. We said we were going to follow up with 2, and we're doing it. Everyone says 2 is the best one. We're going to put that to the test and watch people die in miserable ways in a movie that's dumb. And I'm excited. I cannot wait for this. So Final Destination 2.
But I thought the last 2. One was the Final Destination. There's another destination after the Final Destination?
Right. Brian, let me introduce you to the game series Final Fantasy. And same problem.
Good point.
That is... Like, aren't they, and some, didn't we find out they're still working on new versions of this, or like there's a reboot coming?
There'll always be another one coming. A new one.
I kind of love that they're doing that. Well, anyway, Final Destination 2, that's on the docket for next week. So come back and enjoy that with us. Okay. Don't forget, our website is filmsack.com. And if you want to leave us voicemails, that's always a possibility. You guys are too chicken because I haven't got any Filmsack ones lately, but 801-471-0462. Don't be chicken. Call the line and leave a message. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address, or just use the website for said message sending. You can also find us on Twitter @FilmSack. That'll do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.